First to Rural News, and Tony Allen has the big stories of the week. And Tony, a decision on a very contentious coal mine in New South Wales.
The government has approved the New South Wales Liverpool Plains to have a watermark coal mine run by a Chinese company, Shenhua. Now, this has been very controversial, and the Environment Minister, Greg Hunt, has finally approved the mine, subject to quite a lot of conditions. And he says he will stop the mine if it affects groundwater. But that's not enough for the Agriculture Minister, Barnaby Joyce, this week. He's taken to various social media to complain that he tried but failed to block the project, that he'd done everything he can. The world has gone mad, he says. Someone else who's mad is the former independent Tony Windsor. Now, Mr. Windsor's water trigger bill when he was in Parliament was used to assess this mine's impact. Mr. Windsor is now saying he might even return to Parliament or try to return to Parliament and topple Mr. Joyce in the seat of New England. So it's a whole new side battle starting up there. Mr. Windsor says this water trigger failed to thoroughly consider the whole region's groundwater.
It is a mine in the middle of a floodplain, some of the best soil outside Ukraine in the world, underlying with this massive groundwater system, the biggest in the Murray-Darling. And we've just gone through this, the absurdity in some ways of the agricultural white paper looking at water and how we're going to mitigate climate change with water, etc.
So it certainly caused a bit of a political barney. How's it been received by farmers in the region?
Well, in general, not very well. You do have to remember that some farmers have actually sold their land to mining companies and made quite a bit of money. Mr. Windsor himself has sold some land to mining companies, and there are allegations around the place that some people are being a bit hypocritical about this. But New South Wales Farmers Association President Fiona Simpson says the decision has failed the people of the Liverpool Plains.
I think it shows a huge lack of understanding by the minister that one of the conditions is that if they end up using more water and water that is owned by landholders, that they are required to make good with that water and supply that water. It's just impossible to do something like that.
And there's been a big turnout for a meeting on the Murray-Darling Basin Plan.
Yes, water is a big issue. And this week, the Victorian Independent Senator John Madigan, who's travelled about 6,000 kilometres through the Murray-Darling Basin talking to people, brought along a whole pile of other senators, including crossbench senators, the independents and minor parties, to Barham on the Murray. And they had a community meeting and 1,000 people turned up, which just shows the level of concern about the basin communities and the troubles caused by the Murray-Darling Basin Plan. The audience called for a number of things: a halt to federal government water buybacks, a greater focus on social, economic and environmental outcomes in the basin, and they voted no confidence in the basin authority. So that was a pretty bad rap for the whole system. One of the senators there was the Liberal Democratic Senator David Lionhelm, and he's likely to be the chair of a Senate inquiry, which is going to be held in the Basin Plan. And part of the gathering was to inform that Senate inquiry. And he says he's going to aim to get some change out of the process.
Senate inquiries sometimes go nowhere. I don't know where this will end up. Sometimes you get blockages where the minister just doesn't want to know, or the department says, well, we know all the answers, we don't need any of your advice. Well, then, you know, that's when, well, political blackmail can sometimes come in. You have to do a bit of arm twisting, you know. We'll see where this leads.
Well, a lot of the groups, local groups, want it to lead somewhere because they're concerned that all sorts of things like health services, education services are suffering because the populations are dwindling in the basin. One of those who was at the meeting was Judy McGuinness from the New South Wales Primary Principals Association. She said dropping populations were affecting the quality of the schooling.
There's an ever-widening gap between rural and city students. The problem's definitely being exacerbated in the basin area with the declining populations. For a secondary student, we have less curriculum options. So it also then implicates our ability to recruit quality teachers and quality leaders into rural areas.
We've heard a lot about high beef prices, and it's something that we're starting to see at the butcher shop as well. But what impact is it having on the cattle herd in Australia?
Well, it's shrinking the herd quite dramatically. Farmers are getting rid of their cattle, sending them off to the abattoir for two reasons. One is that they get good prices for them. The other one is that in some areas they are in drought and they can't feed the cattle anyway, so better to send them off and make good money. 170,000 cattle a week are being killed at abattoirs in Australia at the moment. That's a really large number, and the country's on track to kill 9 million head for beef this year. It's first time for a long time we've had this rate of slaughter. And analyst Ben Thomas from Meat and Livestock Australia says one of the reasons the herds are shrinking is there aren't that many calves, because 53% of the cattle being killed are female.
That tells us that going forward, with a lower cattle herd, around 25 to 26 million head, with more females having been killed or exited the system, it's going to be a slow rebuilding phase. And when we look out to 2020, it is unlikely that the cattle herd will be back up to anywhere near that 29 million head mark where we started in 2013.
That's a bit Orwellian, isn't it? Exited cattle, exited the system.
Mm. It is. We hear a lot about fad diets and the impact they have on our food producers, pushing up demand for things that are sometimes a little bit odd. What's the latest on this one?
Well, they not only want the meat from the cattle, they want the bones as well. There's great interest now in paleo diets and gut health diets. And some of them say that what you really need is to get a whole pile of beef bones and boil them for several days and make this really thick broth and then drink it.
Just like my gran used to do.
That's right. Apparently they have broth bars in the United States now. So some beef producers and some butchers have reported selling out of bones. You can even order the bones online now. Once upon a time, you get them free at the butcher and give them to the dog. Not anymore. Organic online shop manager Kate Blundy says dieters are very keen to make this bone broth.
If I look at my sales, the second most in-demand product is bones, which in the past 3 months, which is 3 years ago, wouldn't have even featured, I guess, in a top seller.
And some interesting research this week on where baby fish come from.
Yes, this could have relevance right around the world. Previously, scientists thought fish developed in coastal estuaries, most fish. But researchers on the new science ship, the Investigator, have been investigating the Eastern Australian Current. That's the warm current off Eastern Australia. And they've discovered marine eddies that go for a few days. They spin around and they provide a haven for young fish. Professor Ian Suthers from the Sydney Institute of Marine Science says these huge eddies are nutrient-rich, they're cold water, they well up from the deep, and they're full of baby fish.
These things last for 2 to 3 weeks, which is just the right window for a larval fish to grow up and then get its fins, get its eyes, and then swim back to the coast and settle into an estuary. So we were really amazed by this, that this is now a very different kind of mechanism that is not in the textbooks, is not in the papers, and it's probably a principle that applies to all currents, all coasts around the world.
And finally today, this story has one politician hopping mad. It's about the famous Akubra hat.
Yes, well, they call Bob Katter the Mad Hatter, and he's nearly always seen with his Akubra hat. He's threatening to stop wearing it because of what the Akubra company has done. This week it announced it would close its New South Wales plant that processes rabbit skins. What it means is that no longer will Akubra hats have Australian rabbit in them.
I've heard it takes something like 12 rabbits to make one hat.
It's a huge user of rabbits, and one of the problems in Australia, apart from the fact that it's a bit costly to get the rabbit skins, is that Khaleesi virus has decimated a lot of the rabbits. So the company says it needs to cut costs to remain in business and will now import processed fur from Europe. So until recently, it's been a mix of local and foreign rabbit fur. The factory at Kempsey is closing. That's only got 3 or 4 employees, so it's not like it's going to cost a lot of jobs. And the hats will still be made in Australia, but that's not good enough for Bob Katter, nor is it good enough for the people who do supply the skins. Matthew Nows from Gippsland Farmed Rabbits in Victoria says he's lost his contract to supply skins to the factory at Kempsey.
It's probably 10 or 15% of our cash flow on average. So with no place for the skins to go, that money's not available and the skins are going to end up probably in landfill. There's no other location for them to go.
Who would have thought Australia didn't have enough rabbits for Akubra hats?
Thanks very much, Tony. Those stories and some more great features on our website at abc.net.au/rural.